Sue Dugan here this morning on Share Radio, Share Radio Morning, making the pound in your pocket go that little bit further. I'm joined this morning by personal finance expert Martin James, and I'm delighted to see you again. Welcome.
Lovely to see you, Sue. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Going to run through the money stories making the news today. Coming up, we'll talk about Facebook recruitment, bringing on board new staff to tackle extremist content to provide more eyes on the content that's posted there. But first, Martin, we'll start with this in the Telegraph. There are plans to bring in tougher advertising rules for broadband providers to stop us being misled. It could mean they'd have to ensure at least 50% of customers can receive the advertised headline speeds, which, to be honest, to me and possibly to a lot of people, it's just numbers, isn't it? Just numbers. MP, whatever. Current standards say figures quoted in broadband adverts must apply to a minimum of just 10% at customers, which feels rather generous. So what are the rules for advertising broadband speeds at the moment, Martin?
Well, it's variable. The advertisers are allowed to use bigger fonts for their bigger speeds, as long as they specify that minimum 10% within the context of the advert or in that little teeny tiny font that you see on the bottom of television screens, then they can get away with it. Now, I've been speaking to a number of journalists about this subject, and The Telegraph have been running a campaign about this for quite some time, and it still comes as quite a big surprise to people, myself included. Broadband is one of those subjects that people are kind of begrudgingly accepting in terms of kind of rubbish speeds, because I think we all tend to consider that they're all as bad as each other. Is it worthwhile changing to another provider?
It's all the same fibre optic cable at the
exactly.
end of the day.
Exactly. So this is, I'm not a massive fan of like over legislating for things, but I think this is one of those occasions where Ofcom as a regulator really is doing the right thing and could potentially do a lot more. There's a huge difference between advertising a speed and only actually providing 10% of it, particularly if you need broadband, if you're more vulnerable or if you're elderly or if you're living in a more isolated location. These things really do matter. It becomes less about entertainment and more about safety.
Yeah, it's less about what's coming down. It's more about just having it there as the facility, isn't it? So the change proposed is to ensure that at least 50% of customers can receive the advertised headline speed, as opposed to the 10%, which is the requirement at the moment. Are the government admitting that these advertisements then are effectively lies, given that so few customers actually meet that criteria?
Well, they're never going to admit that directly. No. However, the fact that this has been recognised and the government have felt that it's something that was necessary to step in about is actually really important. And so, yes, read into that what you will. I mean, I work with Resolver, the free complaints people, and we've been dealing with loads and loads of consumers who've basically been saying, how do I actually complain about my broadband speed? I mean, what can I actually do? So what I'd encourage people to do, without mentioning any brands, is to go onto, is to download one of a range of free apps that you can get. There are loads and loads of different ones to check your broadband speed. And if you don't feel that you're getting what you should be getting, you don't have to wait for these new rules to kick in. Mm-hmm. You can actually just do a couple of screenshots after doing some tests of what your broadband is providing, and then take that back to your broadband provider. At best, you might be able to kind of get a much better deal. At worst, you might still get a couple of quid off your bill. It's definitely worthwhile doing, and it's free. So I'd encourage people to do that without waiting for the new rules to kick in.
Okay, so go and check what speed you're actually being served up and how that relates to your contract.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the local area. I live in quite a rural part of the UK. I live in a village in Hertfordshire, and broadband creaks. And I did shop around last time when the contract was up for renewal, but I found that actually all of the providers were promising broadly the same as what I had anyway. And I've just kind of accepted it's where I live. It's a largely rural part of the UK. Therefore, I've just got to suck it up. And I don't know if many people share the same mindset as me, that it just is.
Well, that's certainly what people tell me, Sue. And, you know, to give some consolation to people out there living in rural areas, I live in the very urban part of London, Brixton, and I have exactly the same problem. I have terrible broadband service, awful, because I live in an old block of flats, and the technology isn't that impressive, and I'm basically the last flat at the end of the cable. So it all goes wrong, and, you know, you have to ask yourself, well, if I go to another provider, are they using the same cable? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be any better? What are the leaving fees going to be? All of these things kind of add up. And it's one of those areas where we should, as a society, we should all start to turn around and go, hold on a second, why are we accepting this generally bad service all around? What's being promised isn't what's being delivered. So it's great that Ofcom have made this decision, but actually there's a lot more that needs to be done to make this industry truly competitive.
It all depends, I suppose, what you use your broadband for as well, whether or not you're using it for applications where speed is critical.
Absolutely.
Or you're just doing a bit of Facebook surfing. Which brings us neatly to our next story this morning.
Lovely segue.
I know. I'm good at this, aren't I? Coming up, it's the end of the old paper £5 note. But first, the Daily Mail is reporting that Facebook is to hire 3,000 more staff to police its content. The extra staff will combat extremist and distressing content, especially in videos on the social media site, which is something many commentators have been calling for. There have been some dreadful stories reported in the last couple of weeks over the use of the Facebook Live facility. Do you consider this to be a big problem for Facebook? If not in terms of the content that's posted up there and their handling of it, but the PR behind it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if this has been a PR disaster for the big companies. And what's really interesting is, if you look at what's going on behind this, so Facebook, Google and YouTube are basically have the market pretty much sewn up when it comes to digital advertising and things like this. And this has been quite obvious for a while that, you know, inappropriate content's been appearing next to advertisements. And, you know, as anyone who's ever kind of had some of those targeted advertisements and thought, why on earth are you trying to sell me, you know, all of this kind of thing? It can actually be quite offensive to people as well, not to mention just difficult for brands who are trying to flog you stuff. And one of the key problems with this kind of advertising is that it's been going on for ages. Everybody knows it. And yet, because they all advertise on those platforms, lots of papers have been slow to criticise it until the BBC and The Guardian and many, many other advertisers suddenly said, enough is enough. We cannot have our advertised content next to ISIS videos. It's completely ludicrous. And again, it's a reminder that the market actually isn't that diversified here. This is critical for Facebook, who are just about to hit their 2 billionth customer. It's been in the news today. And it's, you know, which is, as I'd love to say, it's good that Facebook are taking on 3,000 members of staff. They're not doing it out of kindness for us. They're doing it to protect their advertising.
OK, so what does this say about Facebook and Zuckerberg's commitment to users' safety then?
Well, it's like most PR things, it can be read in lots of different ways. But let's just look at those figures again. 2 billion users and 3,000 extra staff. That's not a huge commitment in the big scheme of things. One of the truths that's actually underlying this, because we can't just bash Facebook. Well, we can do if we want, but is it one of the things that is really interesting is the technology here is moving so quickly. There's an assumption that these wonderful complex algorithms that all these companies use are, you know, faultless, but they're not. It's hard to recognise what all the content's going to be.
Yeah, I'm just looking at figures reported today, actually. They've reported profits of just over $3 billion, £2.5 million in the first quarter. That's a 76% rise year on year. And you mentioned nearly 2 billion signed up users.
Signed up, yes, absolutely.
Yes, signed up Facebookers with accounts, of which 1.3 billion use it daily. So that's 0.6 billion of the population.
So glad you did the maths on that one.
Yeah, because I was doing it in such a hurry. Whose accounts are dormant or they just can't be bothered looking at cat videos or whatever.
Exactly. People are losing interest in a lot of these things. But also as well, it's worthwhile bearing in mind that young people are increasingly using YouTube or Instagram as ways to kind of keep in touch. And advertisers are struggling to find out ways to kind of flog them stuff. So we'll have to see how all of this evolves. But ultimately, the battle over content, free speech, and what we want to be sold or not be sold will continue to rage for quite some time.
It's an interesting one to keep an eye on, isn't it?
It certainly is. I'll post about it later.
We'll talk about M&S adverts in a moment, the CBI, and Fivers as well. The paper £5 note will no longer be a legal tender from tomorrow. That's the older style £5 note. It's mainly, I think, the newer ones which are in circulation at the moment. But the Bank of England has said that 150 million of its paper notes are still out there in circulation. We need to spend them really quickly. That coming up here on Share Radio with Martin.
Share Radio.
Don't let your savings take a hit. Keep your finances fighting fit
one punch at a time with Money Fight Club on Share Radio Morning. This is what happened last time.
The benefit of getting your currency early on, if you know what your budget is, you can lock that down. But do the research. Don't just go to your local travel agent. Certainly don't wait until you get to the airport to do it.
Money Fight Club on Share Radio Morning. Every Tuesday from 12 o'clock.
The latest April edition of MoneyWise magazine is out now. You can read about how to save money on rail fares. The team ask, can you make money from collecting petrol station memorabilia? And we look at indemnity insurance. Is there any point? MoneyWise's April edition is on WH Smith newsstands now for just £3.95, or head over to moneywise.co.uk to subscribe for your copy.
This is Share Morning on Share Radio. Good morning, 16 minutes to 11. Alongside is personal finance expert Martin James. Your musings and ruminations, where might one find those, Martin?
Well, I was using a £5 note as a bookmark, which is ridiculous because I never have enough change. I have no idea how that happened. I read in the bath, so I've got a feeling that I may have dropped my actual bookmark into the bath and just grabbed what was on the bedside table. But down the side...
I love the idea that you care little for the value of the denomination of these notes.
Yes, money means so little to me.
They're just a bookmark.
I was thrilled I went to the shops immediately, I can tell you.
Well, come on and talk about this story in some detail, because we've been running a Twitter poll this morning as to whether or not people lament the loss of the older style notes and whether there's a certain amount of nostalgia there as well. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Where might we find your writings on the world of personal finance?
You can find me on my blog and on my website, Martin C. James, but also check out Resolver, where we've got loads of articles and tips and all things money and finance and consumer rights related. So I crop up in the most unusual places, Sue, as you know.
Get him while he's hot, that's what I say. We'll talk about the Confederation of British Industry calling on the government to do more to tackle the growing skills shortage in a moment. But I want to talk about Marks and Sparks, Marks and Spencer, M&S. To advertise its food and clothing together for the first time, they've kept them separate, particularly the food advertising, and it's very stylish and it's very high-end and it's become a thing in its own right, hasn't it, their food adverts. Its new campaign will urge customers to spend it well. The company says the idea is to get people thinking differently about M&S and recapture its position as a pioneer in culture. I wonder if they're trying to drag what has been a relatively poorly performing clothing sector along in the wake of a really well-performing food sector, which has been pretty much M&S's pattern for a good decade or more now.
Well, absolutely. And I you couldn't put it better, see. This is one of those... This is a PR campaign wrapped up as the
shall I try it?
Yes, go for it.
Not just any pants. These are M&S pants.
Love it.
Would that work?
That totally works, exactly.
I'm sure their actual campaign is a lot more polished than that, though, somehow.
Yes, exactly. You can now eat your new prepared lamb shanks whilst in your Marks and Spencer's pants. It's absolutely marvellous. Stating the obvious as an advertising campaign, it's... it's about time. The Marks and Spencer's is considered to be one of those traditional brands that, you know, stands the test of time. And it does, but that doesn't mean that it shouldn't change and adapt. They are now thinking apparently about doing online sales of food and deliveries, slowly but surely just introducing it so their customers get used to it. But Marks and Spencer's is going to have to adapt with the model that everyone else is moving along with. So it's really interesting. I have to say, when I was reading this article, there's some PR line spectaculars in there, which really made me laugh out loud. So my apologies to the chief exec of Marks and Spencer's. But I particularly liked this. This is all about the brand being an enabler of a life well lived. And my absolute favourite, it's about empowering our customers to say no to the ordinary so they can say yes to the best. Which makes it sound like an Olympics competition, really, doesn't it?
It does sound like a Team GB motto, doesn't
it? Though?
It's all about pants.
Well, indeed. I will still go into Marks and Spencer's every now and then just to treat myself. But then, of course, the big problem that they've got is the fact that it's actually quite pricey. Mm. So, and, you know, as things get a little bit tighter for everybody money-wise, that's going to be the big challenge for Marks and Spencer's, making it more than the occasional treat.
Where do they stand right now in the retail sector?
Well, they're actually not doing as bad as everyone thinks they are. It's unfortunately, the Marks and Spencer's is one of those organisations that everybody has quite high expectations of, but it's still underperforming. It's been consistently underperforming in its clothes departments for a while, there is a lot of scope to go. There was even talk about cutting off the food part of the business and running that separately. They're shutting their much beloved French shops as well. So we'll have to see where this will leave M&S. But it's difficult because their customers simply say, don't fiddle with it too much. We like our Cardies and we like our nice, you know, A-line skirts and everything else, and the pants, of course. So it's tricky because they have a limited scope of movement here in the market. It just remains to see how loyal those fickle customers will be when the penny starts to pinch.
This is personal finance expert Martin James, who's taking us through the money and business stories of the news today. We'll talk about Fivers in a moment, but a leading business group says the UK is at a crossroads that will define prosperity for generations to come. The CBI wants the next government to deal with skills shortages and to be as clear as possible on tax and regulation. It says it'll be an important time for the country, with the priorities being Brexit talks and dealing with new technologies. Now, we've talked on and off over the years here at Share Radio about skill shortages, particularly in the tech sector. And various reports over the years have had it as being quite poor and quite a big issue. Other reports have been shown a lot more confidence about where we are in terms of skills and training and everything else in the UK. How do you assess it?
Well, it's a really, really interesting statement by the CBI, and its timing is interesting as well, given the fact that it's the Brexit negotiations are now officially ugly. And there's an election on the horizon. And this can be read as a very clear warning. The underlying message from all of this is, as well as the tech centre, the tech jobs that you mentioned, it's also what they're also hinting at here is blue-collar, traditional blue-collar roles. Mm-hmm. The steel industries, all of those industries that traditionally kind of underpinned the economy, they've all gone, and you can't have... The problem with our economic model, and the one that we're going to face a lot more now without being too depressing, is the fact that we've based it around non-labour-related work. So the finance sector makes up a huge amount of the economy, but blue-collar jobs, the working man's jobs, the traditional roles in the UK have gone, and it's those skills that are necessary. It's the engineers we need. It's the scientists we need to be training up. And that's where we're really going to be struggling. You can't suddenly say goodbye to Europe and then magically make loads of people with these very specific skills appear overnight. My father was worked designing turbines for nuclear power stations. Wow. Which was quite fun for me and him growing up in the 80s with my very left-wing militant self marching up and down. But that's the skill set that has changed. He went from working for an organisation where there were 4,000 members of staff at what was GEC. And when he left, he was one of four original people from the company. And they're all gone now, and they still try to get him to come out of retirement to help them with their various engineering problems. This is where we're struggling. Those skills don't magically reappear. They're taught, they're nurtured. And this is the challenge that we're going to face for our economy.
Mm. And I'm just thinking of other things as well. Over the years, we've been alerted at various points about things like a shortage of plumbers and... they're very skilled individuals. And that general discussion there's been over whether or not we should necessarily push our young people down a route of academia, or whether we should perhaps encourage more people into apprenticeships, to a trade.
Well, absolutely. And this is the thing.
And the perceived value of all of that too.
Well, absolutely. And because there is a perception gap here. And I know people who gave up city jobs to retrain as plumbers and builders because they were making a lot more money out of it ultimately. And they were doing something that they really, really liked. But there is still a perception that, you know, it's somehow beneath people to actually have a technical skill. And that's complete rubbish. We need those people. Just in the same way that, you know, for all of the talk about Brexit and everything else, the one thing that everybody seems to agree on is how efficient, you know, the Polish builders and plumbers are and how effective they are. And I know some quite firm Brexiteers who really, really wanted to leave the EU, who are mortified at the idea of their regular plumbers going back to Poland. And, you know, the irony of that is kind of not lost on them. But this is the thing. We need those skills. We need to encourage people to have them. And once they've got them, we can't suddenly change the economic model and then go, oh, no, actually, no, we don't need you anymore. We're just going to take all of this offshore. We have to nurture those industries if we're going to protect them.
This is personal finance expert Martin James on the money stories making the news today. And our final story is about money, because the paper £5 note will no longer be legal tender from tomorrow. It was replaced, we think, about a year ago now, Martin, don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah,
By the plasticky one. The Bank of England said 150 million of its paper £5 notes. That's the equivalent for about three for every adult in the UK. That's a nice lunch, that is. Remain out there in the public. Shops may refuse them from Saturday. Banks, though, ought to exchange them. And on one hand, you go, how do people leave money lying around like this? How are we so careless that we have these undiscovered fivers? But it does happen, doesn't it?
It really does happen. And I think it's part of the, you know, as I said before with my slightly ridiculous bath story, it's bizarre how these things happen. We can all be a bit absent-minded. We get in, we just chuck the contents of our pockets around and it goes down the back of the sofa, down the back of the radiator. We forget what coat we were wearing.
I have a terrible habit of tucking change back into the pocket of a coat rather than putting it back into my wallet. which is a terrible habit, but it is quite nice sometimes when you do find a stray tenner.
It's a surprise, it's isn't it? I know. I do love that, though. I have to say, I very rarely find a stray tenner.
More like a stray 20p, actually.
Yes, but, and that's a good day for me, frankly. A spare 20p. Ooh, I thought I'd do something with that. And I think this is just one of those bizarre things. It's going to be really interesting because as we were saying before, this has really crept up on people. People do not realise. So I'm going to do a bit of a push out on social media channels today and through other organisations just to kind of flag this up. But I can see across the nation there will be sofa cushions being unfurled and shaken and coats
being... Piggy banks being popped
open. Oh, they will be, absolutely. Yeah. Don't forget those piggy banks. And also as well, the clock is ticking on the pound because actually that is going to cease in circulation, I think, 6 months' time. Mm-hmm. It's very quick, that turnover. Mm-hmm. And that's when people really need to be breaking down kind of their piggy banks, as you say, and the bottles filled with change.
Yeah, you do need to... Yeah, convert it over, don't you? What's the process then? If by the weekend you still have one, what should you ought to do with it?
Well, ideally, shops are allowed to refuse £5 notes from the Saturday onwards. That doesn't necessarily mean they will do. So close on Sunday when the tills close, the money in that till can still be converted by the Bank of England. But you need to get your fivers into your bank before the end of the weekend. Now, bear in mind, it's Saturday and not all banks will be open on Saturday. So really, I would start searching now.
OK, just spend it.
Yes, spend it, absolutely.
Spend it on something small but treaty. We've been running a bit of a Twitter poll on this today, wondering if nostalgia exists out there for... the older style fiver and older notes in general, because I remember when they used to be the size of pillowcases.
Absolutely.
You know, you could fold them over 20 times, couldn't you? Joe doesn't remember all of this, but what is the world telling us today?
People are actually in favour of the new £5 note, according to our Twitter poll. So we've basically asked, which do you prefer, the new one, plastic fantastic, or the old fiver? And 64% of people are saying they prefer the new fiver, and 36% of people saying that they... have that feeling that they don't really want to change. I'm personally with those people there saying I prefer the old fiver. I don't really like change, so I'm not for this new plastic note.
You're not in favour.
I'm not.
That's what you've been telling us this morning on Twitter. Thank you very much. That's Share Radio UK, by the way, our Twitter handle. I travel back and forth a lot to Northern Ireland, and I'm always coming back to the mainland UK with Northern Ireland issued banknotes. Fivers, tenners and twenties. And it's an absolute pain in the backside to go and get them changed.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it though? And people, they're so funny about them. I've been talking about this subject for ages and ages and ages. And I also did quite a bit on BBC, Ulster. Other radio stations are, of course, available. You know, this is a source of frustration to lots of the journalists and presenters I work with over there. Because, you know, the whole thing about different tender banknotes from, you know, Scotland, from Northern Ireland. It's so frustrating. But, you know, there is a bit of nostalgia for them as well, and there are lots of collectors. So I would say if you've missed your opportunity to, let's face it, it doesn't even buy a pint a fiver these days, so a little treat would be the key thing. But if you find like a missing £5 note, why not just use it as a bookmark? We'll keep it as a reminder of
times past.
Time's past.
A gentler age.
As we drift towards the future.
Martin, this is the final time you will appear with us at Share Radio, at least in our current incarnation. And thank you very much indeed for your very amusing contributions over the years.
Oh, thank you, Sue. And love to the team. You've all been wonderful.